Thursday. We've got the decision, and we'll yield to Senator Metzger in a moment to give us the legal rendition of it. Today, we are going to finish up our work on hearing from the governor, from our state treasurer, and then from Lynn Lundquist on three more ideas for a stability and reserve fund. And then what I'm going to do, committee, is appoint a group. We've got now seven ideas on the board. We'll get the final two today and hear from the treasurer. And then I'm going to appoint a work group. And I'm not sure if Representative Butler has decided if they want to join in or not. We did make that offer on Thursday and had some good discussions with Representative Butler on getting the House involved. But the work group will be comprised of myself, Senator Schrader, Senator Bruce Starr, Senator Devlin, and Senator Morse, who I haven't spoken to. So he can, I'm seeing two thumbs up and a smile, which usually indicates he'd like to be involved. So we'll meet and start vetting these seven ideas for stability funds after we get through our hearings today. Paul, anything before we get our august state treasurer up before us?
Mr. Chair, I have a comparison table there for you. I thought I'd go through that when we hear the treasurer and Teresa McHugh from the governor's office.
Do you want to do that now, or do you want to do that?
I thought I'd wait, unless you want me to do it now.
Big decisions before 9 a.m.
Yeah,
well, let's bring Treasurer Edwards up. He's worked on a stability fund and talked about it to citizens statewide. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Randall Edwards, State Treasurer of Oregon, and thank you for having me here today to talk about, I think, one of the important parts of the long-term financial health of Oregon, and that is the concept of rainy day funds and how they impact Oregon. As Treasurer, as you know, I have a particular interest in the establishment and the development of the state's rainy day funds, because a rainy day fund is one factor that the rating agencies consider when looking at the state's financial health in calculating our bond rating. And, of course, a bond rating correlates to the interest rate that the state receives on the bonds it sells. The higher the rate, the higher the rating, the less the state pays on interest. Conversely, the lower the rating, the more the state pays in interest. And over time, that translates into millions of dollars. One of the few bright spots to come out of the recent recession and special sessions was a constitutional amendment to create a rainy day fund for schools by converting the Education Endowment Fund into the Education Stability Fund. As you know, the state never had a rainy day fund, and the national credit rating agencies had repeatedly faulted Oregon for its lack of foresight in this area. Ballot Measure 19 established this rainy day fund for education with the dedicated funding source of lottery, and with triggers for its use in the event of an economic downturn. The credit rating agencies have acknowledged the positive step that the legislature and Oregon voters took to buttress the state's financial structure and staff off the drastic impacts of future recessions by creating this fund. What was seen as a negative on the state's credit report, the lack of a rainy day fund, has moved into the positive column. In fact, Moody's rating agency has stated that the rainy day fund measure approved by voters is expected to have a positive long-term credit impact. Many of the bills before you create new rainy day funds. And without speaking specifically on any particular bill, I'd like to discuss what I see as one of the priorities before you in respect or with respect to rainy day funds. While creating an additional rainy day fund could be beneficial to the state's long-term health, we should not lose sight of the fact that we also need to fill the one we already have. I've received a lot of questions about whether the Educational Stability Fund, because it is dedicated solely to education, is an adequate rainy day fund for the state as a whole. My answer to this question is, yes, it is an adequate mechanism. It is a constitutional fund recognized by the credit rating agencies with a dedicated source of funding, which, as you recall, is an 18% of net lottery proceeds. That's why it's important that we demonstrate our commitment to refilling the fund and maintain the discipline to reserve it for its use for times of true economic downturn. The Legislative Revenue Office, and Paul in particular, issued a report talking about the Education Stability Fund that it would not reach its 5% cap of the general fund until the 2013-15 biennium, at which time it would project it to contain approximately $750 million. This projection assumes, of course, that there is no recession in that time period or that no money was taken from the fund. It was calculated before the introduction of line games, so obviously with line games coming on, the timeline could be accelerated should that occur. I do encourage the committee to explore other options to further enhance the fund. For example, although the fund regularly receives a portion of lottery proceeds and will refill over time, there is nothing to prevent the legislature from adding additional monies to fill the fund more quickly through appropriations, modifications of the kicker, or other mechanisms that you have before you. In the event, though, that you find that you need to create another rainy day fund, there's one thing I would like to bring to your attention, and it's more of an accounting piece. And Paul and I had this discussion about, should you create a new fund, where should that be placed? Specifically, I would ask that if you do create a new rainy day fund, that it be a dedicated account in the general fund to help ease the state in managing its imbalances of cash flows. Such imbalances are now an inherent part of the general fund experience each biennium. Cash flow imbalances are simply a mismatch between the timing when the state receives revenues and when it must pay its bills. It is an issue separate from the state's budget and legislative spending limits. To cover such cash flow shortages, the state borrows internally from other funds or borrows externally from the capital markets utilizing the tax anticipation notes that you approved a couple of years ago. By placing the fund in a dedicated general fund account, it would allow the state to utilize these monies for cash flow purposes at less expense to the state than borrowing from other internal funds or the capital markets. The parameters and controls established by the legislation and placed on the funds would apply equally regardless of where the fund is housed. I want to emphasize that placing the rainy day fund in a dedicated fund account does not expose it to any more risk than it would if it were created outside the general fund. Many restricted accounts reside in the general fund and are used to help balance the timing of the state's cash inflows and outflows, but are not available for additional general fund expenditures. We should treat the rainy day fund in the same manner. While the credit rating agencies have acknowledged the positive step the legislature and Oregonians have taken in creating a rainy day fund, they still cite several weaknesses, including the initiative system, the kicker law, low ending fund balances, and a narrow general fund that relies on a single volatile tax, the income tax. And I understand that attaining any of these improvements on a sustained basis is difficult. However, small steps can be taken. For example, before you is legislation to use a portion of the kicker to fund a rainy day fund. I can safely say that a move in this direction would be seen as positively by the rating agencies. Again, I'm pleased that you are considering this important issue. I think anything we do to continue to bolster a long-term reserve is a credit positive to Oregon and will help the long-term health of the state of this state. And I appreciate the opportunity to be here and happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Questions for our state treasurer.
Randall, do you have, Paul, and he's going to walk us through this in a second, but let's put a little chart together. Do you have that?
I do.
You do. So it would be helpful, and I know that you might not be able to do this because you haven't looked through each and every proposal, but that's what we're trying to sort through. Is we've got about six or seven ideas. We're going to get the OBA one and then the governor's. But I think it would be instructive for us to have your counsel.
Sure.
What we'll do with this work group is just start ranking them. And you've got the policy, and then you've got these are all referrals.
Right.
And so you've got to understand, or at least consider the politics of them, too.
I'd be happy to help you with that. And again, I think the message I'm saying is we've taken a good step forward. We got a rainy day fund for schools. As we all know, that's a big portion of the general fund. It is 5% of the general fund. I think, again, as Paul's numbers show, it takes a long time to fill that. And I see a lot of these proposals are 10%, and that would, again, be a positive step on top of what we've done. The challenge, I think, is making sure that if you move that number up, that you have the ability to reach it before you tap into it. So, again, that would be something I think you got to consider. But I'd be happy to have my staff and myself would work with you on this.
Oh, that'd be great.
Yeah.
We'll just our first stab will be just ranking them, and so mm-hmm. I don't know if that's feasible for you
sure.
to do also, but
sure.
I think that would be really helpful. Other thoughts or comments for the treasurer? The other one is I've just seen on sheets, and this is a little bit away from the reserve fund, is tapping the stability fund even to meet today's needs, and I don't know if you've weighed in on that question yet. I've seen it at least on one piece of paper of. Before July, we would use it to close out the 05-07 budget.
Well, I think, as I said in my statement, one of the things we've got to show is discipline. And if we create a fund and tap it, it's clear that we're not in an economic recession, which, by the way, is the parameter around the Educational Stability Fund. You have to show economic downturn and then a consistent downturn, and then you have the ability to tap it. I also understand the governor can call a state of an emergency. What I think is most important for the legislature is to show the discipline that it will hold to what it created and honor what the voters of Oregon said they want it for, which is truly a rainy day fund for schools during a downturn. I think you'd be hard-pressed to say that today, even though I'm an advocate and totally believe we still need to challenge ourselves to find more money for schools. This, in my mind, would not be the place to tap.
And so you would oppose it and
would.
Vocally if that was the route.
Because as you and I both know, been in this building a number of years, it's always been a challenge to find the timing right to create a rainy day fund. We found a place that we converted a dedicated fund of lottery, which has always been, again, you want a dedicated source if you can get it. It's in the Constitution. It has those parameters, and I think we've got the mechanism there. Now I think the challenge before us is to have the discipline to build it and grow it. Again, looking at 10% is a great idea, but if we can't get even out of this box or keep this box starting to fill it, we're not really showing ourselves or the rating agencies that we have the discipline to maintain. We really don't have a rainy day fund. Mm-hmm. And I think when it was tapped, as we all know, it was tapped during a downpour, as we all experienced. So for that downpour, even though we still are living with the ramifications of it, if we'd had this set up, as you know, earlier, we might not see the same pressure today on the school budget, mm-hmm. which is really what we're trying to get at, the next round. Thank you.
Other thoughts or questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Paul, do you want to walk us through that the sheet that we were just discussing?
Okay, I'll do that, Mr. Chair. Before we go through this, I wanted to mention a couple of things. The treasurer referred to the cash flow issue, and that is something that we're aware of and have discussed over the years in a number of different contexts. Is you can write the legislation so its general fund means many things within our current statutes, and it's referred to a number of times in a lot of ways that we don't think of it in budgetary terms. So that's certainly feasible to have a fund set up so it's general fund in a treasury cash management sense, but not in a budget sense. So that's something we can work on in the language. The other thing I wanted to mention is the ending balance definition, and we need to make sure we've got that for technical purposes, because the ending balance is a moving target, even up to, as we saw with the TANs, for example, this past spring, the ending balance and beginning balance will change as information comes in. So there'll need to be some date-specific point in which it's considered ending balance for purposes of the definitions here for the reserve funds. In terms of the proposals before you on the chart, the first one is Senate Bill 841 that you'll have discussed in just a minute. That has as a revenue source the ending balance up to 2%. This is calculated following the end of a biennium It doesn't have the set-aside language that you saw in SJR 23. So what you would do is calculate what the appropriations are, and the bill does define appropriations as reversions plus the legislatively approved budget. And those reversions, as I say, continue on into the future. So maybe one way to think of that would be the ending balance as calculated at the time the close of session estimate is done. And that might be some workable language to look at. That usually is done around 1st of September, assuming the session is over, and that is, of course, the base for the kicker. So that would be consistent with that.
Assumptions. The opposite of the assumption is we're still here on September 1.
Senator, we came very close, as you recall, last session to the September forecast, and we had. And, of course, what happened was a close of session actual estimate that's done by the Office of Economic Analysis came out in October. So, but normally it would be September. And that would be one way to think of that base, and then you would calculate to see if the ending balance is greater than 2%. Then 2% would be put into the reserve fund. If it is between 0 and 2%, you'd put the amount up to 2% into the reserve fund. And also the reserve fund would retain its interest earnings, which, of course, as we've discussed, is not the case in the current Education Stability Fund. Those funds are appropriated. I believe you've got a follow-up information from the Oregon Community College Association that showed you how those current interest earnings are used. You recall the testimony we had last week, and they followed up with some additional information. In terms of the triggers for Senate Bill 841, they are the same as the Education Stability Fund. Those three triggers, two of them are budgetary, relating to the forecast. Another one is economic, relating to employment patterns and two consecutive quarterly declines. And then, of course, the and portion of those triggers, the political trigger, is the three-fifths vote. And so those would all be retained under Senate Bill 841. The cap is 10%, as you saw, really consistent in our other proposals. And the uses of the fund would be for general purposes. In terms of the other proposals that you have before you, Senate Bill 974 was not actually on your agenda last time because we didn't have it quite in time, but it is the companion language to SJR 29 that you heard discussed last time. That's that is the 1% or more above the close of session forecast would go into the fund, and again, you would retain the interest earnings. The major change there from the current triggers would be the two-thirds vote required in SJR 29. You have a 10% cap with an 11% trigger for refunds and credits and general purpose usage. SJR 23 is the measure that has the 3%. Here's where the difference is with SB 841, is there would be a projected ending balance, whereas 841 doesn't have any comments on that. It just says that if there isn't any balance, then it's transferred over. One thing I might add about Senate Bill 841 is that the ending balance transfer, for example, even in 0103, you had an ending balance of over $100 million. Because you ended up actually selling bonds to get you over the $100 million, but you didn't know what your revenues were going to be and wanted to make sure that there was sufficient revenue to not have a deficit at the end of the biennium, as the Constitution said. So what 841 says is that if indeed you do draw from the reserve fund during the biennium, you don't have to meet the general fund transfer, the ending balance transfer, and that. So, in other words, it assumes that there's fiscal stress going on, and therefore transfer does not need to take place. The other point to keep in mind about SJR 23 is you would set aside 97% of that May forecast, and then make that transfer once you see that actual revenue exceeds that 97%. On up to the 3%. It also has a 10% cap, and then it also creates this capital projects fund, which is somewhat analogous to the current education stability fund that has a school matching grant. SJR 19 and SJR 2, of course, are modifications, and I can see that I have a mistake on my chart in copying things over. Under SJR 2, the cap goes to 10% rather than the same as current law. Apologize. So the one similarity you have in all the proposals is that they all have a 10% cap.
Mm-hmm.
And they also all have the same triggers, with the exception being the SJR 29, which has the two-thirds vote requirement. So it has a tougher political trigger to access the general fund at that point. Of course, the top proposals, S41, SJR 29, and SJR 23, would all be complements to the current Education Stability Fund. So you need to think about those proposals in conjunction with the current Education Stability Fund. So you have some different, perhaps different times in which you tap the different funds. The major difference in the proposals is the general purpose for these new funds being proposed versus limited to public education, and then the revenue sources are the major differences, in which you either draw the ending balance under current law without a change to the kicker as proposed by SB 841, or you modify the kicker as in SJR 29. SJR 23 uses the ending balance similar to SB 841, and then the other two just are the lottery going into the Education Stability Fund. So there is a fair amount of similarity in these proposals.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. We like charts, and now we just have to give them kind of names so we can remember them easy. Questions for Paul? Senator Morse, do you want to come up? And we need to get that public hearing out of the way on Senate Bill 974, so we're ready to go.
I got a question. Wait, better get the public hearing out of the way.
That's right. That's good. Open a public hearing on Senate Bill 974. This is your companion bill to SJR 29, Senator Morse.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Colleagues, for the record, Frank Morse, State Senator, District 8. I'd really be very brief. I think we've covered the points previously in looking at the joint resolution. The one component that I think, from a political perspective, that has been absent so far in these discussions is discussion of a spending cap. And I know our colleagues in the House feel that that's an important component. I would suggest that the committee look at Senate Bill 470. It's a bill that is co-sponsored by Senator Schrader and myself that essentially would require the Assembly to do what we have done to establish the size of the pie based on the March forecast. And it would put a sense of discipline in this process that has been lacking in the past. One that I think merits consideration is actually memorializing to become the standard. I personally am very opposed to a spending cap because I don't think the data supports that in terms of the actions of the legislature. I think, as I testified previously, the impact of unfunded voter initiatives has a far greater impact on state spending than what has been recognized within the Assembly and without in the broad public sector. So with that, I would encourage at least some discussion to add to this. How can we improve fiscal discipline? Because I think the two will go together in order to arrive at some form of a successful resolution.
And Senate Bill 470 would just have us consecrate the action that we just took by putting a figure out there with what a vote of both chambers and, I guess, a governor's signature, that is the number that we will budget towards
Right. Mr. Chairman, colleagues, what it does, it memorializes up front what we've all, we would vote on a bill, an appropriations bill. And as the case is now, the $12,393,000,000, that would become a bill with broad appropriations, which are yet to come with the co-chair's budget. We then vote on that, and we agree. We set the template in the broad basic categories, and then the Ways and Means goes to work in making those specific appropriations. But it takes us out of this end game of waiting for the last nickel to drop and spending it. And that's the intent of that bill, to set the template early, put discipline in the process. And I know we're not in a hearing on 490, Mr. Chairman, but I think some measure of fiscal discipline has to be a component of this discussion, particularly as it relates to amending the kicker.
Thank you. Senator Pazansky.
Thank you. Even though we're not in a public hearing on 490 or 470?
470.
On 470. When does that play out? I mean, we come into session, we convene, do we wait for the first forecast in the March?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Senator, the March forecast would become the driver for the broad appropriations. Okay.
It'll be our first check to see how our forecast is going, and then at that point we do what we've done.
That's correct. And then any excess in May forecast over the March forecast, the bill is written to direct that into the Education Stability Fund.
Hmm. Other questions for Senator Morse? Thank you. Okay, so we've heard now both of your bills related to a stability fund, and so that helps.
Thank you.
We now got that public hearing out of the way.
Yeah.
We're in the record.
Those pesky public hearings there. We now have those. Close the public hearing on Senate Bill 974. Teresa, I just hope you haven't been here too long. I just noticed you're here. Teresa McHugh from the governor's office is going to talk to us. I don't think y'all have a bill in play, but have some thoughts on what would comprise a stability fund.
Thank you. Good morning.
Morning.
Actually, it turned out to be a good morning to be down here. It's a little lots of people reading the Supreme Court decision upstairs. So,
any initial thoughts? We're doing the same.
Looks like an awful lot was upheld, and the two major provisions that were not upheld relate to the COLA going forward and then the 8%. So I know everybody's taking a look and seeing what that means. So, certainly with the market uptick as well, that all plays into how that's going to play out. So, but I'm waiting for Paul Cleary to pick his head up and brief us on it. So
it's about three or four today, I think, will be.
Have a better
people
idea.
Have a better grasp. Of,
I think that's true.
And is it true the governor's doing some type of press conference this morning?
Yes, it is true. The governor is planning at 10:30 to do kind of an initial press briefing on what we know, and also kind of to help lay out the time frame of how long it's going to take and what's the process going to be to really kind of go through what does it mean, as well as get questions in from the press as well, so that we're making sure we are, as we're evaluating it, answering everybody's questions. So,
well, we shouldn't keep you too long then.
No problem.
So you
thank
up.
You. For the record, I'm Teresa McHugh from the governor's office, and I think your staff called me to kind of talk a little bit about, as the governor put his budget together, how did he think through what he laid out is not a specific proposal, but as a vision around a rainy day fund. As the governor put his budget together this time, the first thing he did with us, and actually as in my former role as the budget director, when he came in to office, one of the things he said is that he appreciated the technical budget preparation that ensured that technically the budget was sound and it was consistent and it was auditable. But in terms of decision making, there was information that, from his viewpoint, was lacking for decision makers to make real, thoughtful choices about allocating scarce resources, as well as about what that allocation meant, not only for the biennium that was upcoming, but for the future. Taking a much longer approach. So he kind of laid that out for us when he came in initially, but with only 6 weeks to get that budget done, those weren't built into the fabric of the entire proposal. So going into this budget, he did have us going through two separate kinds of processes, one ensuring that the technical budget was still connected to the accounting system and audited, and all of the work was done that had been done before, but that we also looked at the budget from a different viewpoint. And a couple of those key pieces were looking at it around principles for allocation of resources, a vision for where do we want Oregon to be in the future, not just kind of reacting to what does it look like today and how do we just survive the next 2 years, but where are we really trying to go to. And then the second piece of that was a discipline around a number of the fiscal issues. So you saw him very firm about not using borrowing, for example, for ongoing operating costs, that should be used as an investment that actually then generates revenue for the future and does things that are good for Oregon for the long term. Not using one-time money for ongoing operating costs unless we truly have a thoughtful plan about what that means, but using those as investments. And so really what he did in that process, and the next piece really leading to a rainy day fund, was to talk about that we had to learn our lessons from the 90s and not position ourselves as we were moving into the recovery, which now it's very nice to say we are now actually above the number of jobs in Oregon from before the recession hit, that we take advantage of our lesson from the 90s and then the recession about preparing as we go into good economic times to capture that and make sure we are providing stability and have a vision for the future that's longer than just getting through the 2 years, and that people then, as they're making choices, can look at what those choices mean against both an investment strategy as well as making sure there was fiscal discipline, that those investments were sustainable, that we were not going into a situation where everybody and we're just trying to figure out how to get through the 2 years and we weren't focused on that. So having said that, what he had us do was make sure that as we put the budget together and as he made choices, we didn't just project them for the 05-07 period, that we actually projected the expenditures out over time in the same way that the revenue forecast has for quite some time been projecting forward. Doesn't always get a lot of attention, but I think as your staff can tell you, that was always part of the job, was doing a projection forward for several biennia of what does the economy look like going out into the future, and that we do the same thing on expenditures, knowing that the further out you go, the more other factors are going to change, but still making sure the decisions we're making today are sustainable and that they have a vision for the future. In doing that, it drove back to making sure that his expenditures that he made were balanced into the future. And in fact, given that we are on that beginning point of a recovery, allowed for not just balancing today, but allowed for two important things for the future. One is actually the building of reserves or a rainy day fund. Oregon being one of, I think, three states now that doesn't have a rainy day fund of the size that folks reviewing the state would say is an adequate size. So it would ultimately result in a rainy day fund, but also move to a place where you have a vision of dollars available for investment and making sustainable choices and being able to invest. And for the governor, it was very important that investment be for the education arena from pre-K through 20. So again, that drove, in effect, not a specific rainy day fund proposal, but drove a system that made sure that the spending was within check of what was reasonably expected to be collected today under the current system, as well as then a piece that turned around, instead of talking about how do we find some way to just get through this biennium, allowed us to start talking about key investments over time. So that was one of the pieces in terms of how he put the budget together. I think the other piece, just looking at a couple of notes here, is again, for the governor, one of the things that is important is stability and adequacy over time. And so one of the questions is, how do you make sure that you're doing this on the right base? And certainly now, as we have a new projection, the governor's made it clear that he believes at least some of that should go into education, because it still would show being sustainable over time and still allow us to be able to make additional investments. So again, it does have that built into it to be able to look at it. The governor did not have a specific proposal. He did not introduce legislation, but in effect, by how he set this out, you would have 4% ultimately being set aside for some, however you did it or if you put it, for some kind of rainy day fund specifically. You'd have 1% in the ending balance, which again, brings you to about a 5%, and then again, remembering that there's still the Education Stabilization Fund as well, which is also a key that is part of reserves for the state and is part of that whole package that could be called a rainy day fund that amounts to ultimately about another percent. So in terms of what he was projecting for, it was somewhere around a 6%.
6% total,
right,
fund. And capitalized by, do you know if y'all have set a date that you would get to the 6%?
Under the projections, Mr. Chair, under the projections we had from the December forecast, and we have folks now working on with March, what does that look like going out? But under the December projections, you would not fully get to that, all of those pieces, until 09-11, but you would have over $400 million in reserve in 07-09 under that. So you'd be about $100 million short in 07-09 based on the December forecast. Again, people are working now to update all of those numbers.
Mm-hmm. We've kind of, you may have looked at, we're considering like six bills and they're referrals, but we would welcome your input. They're referrals because they have to be. But we would welcome the governor's input on them. All of them have settled on this 10%. And I believe, I'm not sure if you go on the bond rating trips,
mm-hmm.
You might be able to provide us some guidance of, is 10% the magic number or is 6%?
Mr. Chair, I think it was kind of a magic time. I never went on the bond rating trips until I got asked. The first time was right after the recession hit, and I thought, now how does this work? In the good times, I never went. I got to go when things were going bad. But initially when we started those bond rating trips, and when you look nationally at that point in time, kind of the magic number was somewhere around 5% that you heard all of the time. Now you're hearing people, because of the depth of this last recession, I think talking more in the neighborhood of 10%. And one of the things I think is important that to talk about is Oregon did have, in effect, some money, if you will, not in a traditional rainy day fund, but we had some options that we put on the table that actually allowed us to help sustain some program, but we didn't get any credit for having taken those actions, and it was a little harder than probably had to be compared to other states in terms of accessing it. In talking to the bond rating companies, they don't throw out a number that says if you have 10%, that is good. They do look at a number of things for the state. Certainly, they look at the volatility of our tax base. They look at whether or not, given that we have reserves, other issues that I think are, for them, they take into account is what does the initiative process look like and what can it bring to the state in terms of the state having to react to things that aren't necessarily under the governor or legislature's control and how does that impact the state. But certainly as you look at our latest ratings that just came out, the statements were very positive about Oregon overall. They were positive about how we have positioned ourselves to take advantage as the economy recovers, which I think was an important statement to them. They want to watch the budget process all the way through and make sure, you know, certainly they were pleased to see the governor proposing a long-term vision, both on the program side. And again, I think for the governor, he views that investment in education as the key to really being able to turn this around. And if we're investing appropriately, the revenues will also be generated because we're growing the right kind of jobs in the state that then drive the whole system up instead of in a downward spiral. So those were the things they looked at. They liked where we are today, and they gave us a stable outlook. They didn't upgrade us yet, but certainly kind of watching how we get through this session and whether or not this view of both a combination of fiscal discipline but a vision for the future of growth, economic growth, quality of life growth in Oregon is on their minds too.
And so you feel with the, and I agree, with the sustainability that the governor has really made the hallmark of this budget, of being able to sustain it over time, and if we do adopt a reserve fund, a greater reserve fund than the stability fund, that an upgrade would be on its way? Or
Mr. Chair, I think, especially from Fitch, the kind of language they used in there indicated that that was something they would receive very positively, and I would not be surprised we would see something like that. I think it would certainly help in that regard.
Questions for Ms. McHugh? Thank you very much.
And we are happy. Again, we haven't reviewed the specific legislation today, but happy to work with you and your staff on taking a look at what makes sense.
Well, we'll get you a copy because we're going to start working on this in the next week or so.
Okay.
And try to work something at least through the Senate in the next 2 weeks.
Okay.
So we'll get you a copy of basically Paul's chart that outlines. And if you could get us just a summary of what you walked us through today in terms of where the governor comes down on this, the referrals, but I think it would be really helpful for us to include your thoughts in our work.
Okay, happy to do that. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. Okay. Open a public hearing on Senate Bill 841. Lynn, do you want to come up? Paul's kind of given us the... And this is the last one. So this will be our... I think it's the sixth or seventh stability fund we've heard. And we're not obviously going to go into work session on the four ones that are listed, although we could just send them all to the floor and have an interesting floor debate.
I can choose.
Four or five, yeah. Kind of do it the old-fashioned way, just start voting them up and down on the floor.
We got four or five stability funds.
Yeah, it would be actually debated out. Speaker Lundquist.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. I'm for the record. My name is Lynn Lundquist. I'm president of the Oregon Business Association. I really do appreciate your willingness to listen to all of the proposals. I think it's perhaps as the most significant thing that maybe one of the most significant things that might come out of the session. I really believe that to be true. Since OBA's inception 6 years ago, and since I entered the political field about 11 years ago, the formation and actual funding in a rainy day reserve has been our goal. All of you know the reasons why we need one. I'm not going to bore you with that. I think we've had ample opportunity over the last number of years to talk about that. The question is not should we do it, but the question is do we have the resolve and will we have the backbone to make sound public policy that trumps the political desire to be all things to all people? And I say that very sincerely, and having sat in your positions, there's nothing negative about that. That's just the reality. I hope my testimony today will come across to you that both OBA and myself are very passionate about this issue. And more importantly, we're optimistic about that in this, I guess I'd say, the sixth year of the new century, that we maybe will make reality become a reality this time. Now, I think you can rightfully ask, why now should we be successful when we failed so many times in the past? I believe there are three reasons, and they're intertwined. First of all, you and to some degree the public are painfully aware of the impact the recession has had on our economy, on our budget process. I mean, I think we all understand that. Particularly when you need to fund essential state services for all Oregonians. Secondly, the resolve in this building that now is the time to actually pass a rainy day fund is the strongest that I've ever experienced. And lastly, OBA believes Senate Bill 741 combines policy and politics in a proposal that nearly everyone can support. And I think that's really important. That's how we tried to design that. I have met with 84 of the 91 policymakers, and no one has said, you know, that's a bad idea or I can never support it. Likewise, not everybody has thought it's the greatest thing since sliced bread. But the responses that I have are the reasons why we're so optimistic. Phrases such as, that's a common sense approach that the public will understand. It's fiscally sound and not politically poisoned. It minimizes a backlash of actually taking some dollars out of the general fund. And that's an innovative way of finding the midpoint between the philosophy that there's never enough money, so nothing can come out of the income stream, and the philosophy that we have to downsize government through a fixed spending limit. Now let me briefly explain what Senate Bill 841 does and what it doesn't do. First, what it does. It transfers the ending balance, as Paul has talked about, into reserve account instead of into the beginning balance of next biennium. It's just that simple. That's the simplicity of it. The maximum amount that can be transferred is 2% of the general fund for the biennium. The reserve fund is capped at an amount equal to 10% that you've already been talking about. And the requirements to access the fund are the same as in the Education Stability Fund. The reason we've I want to go back to a moment for the 2% of the general fund, why we picked that figure, and I'm not sure that's a magical figure. But I'm certainly sure that Paul and others have maybe been here for a while, particularly Senator Starr, been here for a long time, that I can remember, and I think we've had, correct me if I'm wrong, Paul, maybe $800 million in the ending balance. It's been huge. Mm-hmm. And I think, again, to get to that midpoint between the politics and the policies of it. The policy issue is great to put aside a larger amount of money for the reserve fund, but the politics are, when you have that much money in your ending balance, whether it's the education advocates or the human resource advocates, you have that same fight. You know, you're putting too much in the reserve fund because it's taken out of the beginning balance the next biennium. So that's why that's in there. It's a very specific reason why that is in there. Now, what it doesn't do, it does not put the ending balance in the reserve account in any biennium when the reserve account is accessed. And we already had a little bit discussion about that, and I just will use the 03-05 biennium as an example. You did access the Education Stability Fund during that biennium, and you now, with the most recent revenue forecast, I think there's $180 million that's projected to go into the beginning balance, or into the ending balance, actually, for 03-05. So we're saying, under those very specific conditions, when you're already having difficulty, that's not the time to build reserve. It's just common sense. You build reserve when your times are good, not when times are bad. So that's the reasoning for that. Now, with all due respect to Chairman Deckert, Senator Morris, and others who have been consistently working towards getting a reserve fund and using the kicker money as a source of that, and I have to throw myself in that because, as you all know, I worked hard for that over the years. I'm here to admit that I'm throwing in the white flag and that I've come to realize in my own mind that that simply is not going to happen. Now, I don't want in any way negate any endeavors for that. But I'm not just blowing smoke, so to speak, when I say that for Oregonians to give up their kicker when Freedom Works and the Lars Larsons of the world are out saying the legislature is out there stealing your money and they're building a slush fund, I think the opportunity to be successful in that is not much different than being a millionaire at Las Vegas. They're both possible, but I don't think that it's doable. And I know that's fairly strong language, but I sincerely believe that. We've done some polling, and I know Senator Morris done some polling in times past, but the framework we find ourselves in today, I just think it's nearly an impossibility, which makes me sad that in 1997, when we had an attempt to do this sort of this type of thing, put the kicker in the reserve fund, under those conditions, I think we maybe might have had a chance with the public. We didn't have Freedom Works being the same powerhouse that they are today. I don't know. That's conjecture, I guess. In closing, let's look at the budget at the end of the biennium from the point of view of a forest, not an individual tree. So let's take a little broader approach. In this forest approach, you will not see the special interest groups up in arms because 4%, for example, or some other figure, has been taken off the table at the beginning of the biennium. I think that's a very important part. You're going to have a huge fight, as you all know. We've tried this before. There's been bills to do that. That's just the bigger picture analysis. And at the end of the biennium, looking at it again through the forest approach rather than individual tree, it's pretty simple. You've paid all your bills. You've met all your obligations. You're not shortening the school year at that time. You're not putting seniors out on the street. So doesn't it make sense? At the end of the biennium, you take your unused resources and put them into a reserve account. Chairman Deckert and members of the committee, this is a picture you can actually see. It's not just a vision. Because if the legislature passes this bill, or something comparable to that, you will not only have created a rainy day fund, you will have identified resources that can go into the rainy day fund. And when you go home to your district, you can say, we not only created the fund, there's resources available. And this fund complements, in my opinion, the Education Endowment Fund. I think the two of them together will give us an opportunity to raise enough resources in an economic scenario whereby before we have our next recession, we should have, I'm thinking there's an opportunity for $1.5 billion or at least over $1 billion to be in into the fund, which would be significant help. My final thought is simply this. I think the stars of need and desire are lined up, and I think we better not blow this opportunity. I'll be pleased to answer any questions.
Thank you, Len. I appreciate the very candid. It's helpful for us as we sort through the different proposals. You've been at this longer than, well, certainly myself, probably you and Senator Starr have been at this trying to create a reserve fund for the state. Questions for Mr. Lundquist? I guess the only one that I have is, I guess you can circle around it. On Senator Morris's proposal, the polling does at least initially seem to indicate support for it. And I guess it's just your gut saying once a campaign got started, that support would erode to the point that it wouldn't be viable.
Chairman Decker and committee members, I've seen his poll, and I certainly applaud him for taking his own resources to do that. It shows the resolve he has into making something happen. We have done some polling. I believe I've seen other organizations polling. And our polling suggests that, you know, at the best it's 50-50 to start with. And having just been knocked around, enough times, that I just think the difficulty with the political climate, the less government philosophy that we find ourselves, and frankly, I think we have to be very honest that Freedom Works is a major force. And we saw it, we have seen it in different factions, and I would see no reason why it shouldn't be there true now. So that's why, I mean, the perfect world, the policy world, the reserve, the kicker is a place to take it because you don't take it out of the income stream. I mean, I understand that, but I do not believe the public would vote for that.
And I don't know if you want to comment on that. The other, at least two of the proposals just bump the stability fund, the number in the stability fund, up just higher and help capitalize it quicker.
Chairman Deckard, ICE would support that. I think that's a prudent move. It's almost a sad day to say that the lottery is one of the most stable sources of income, but that's reality. Again, going to a reality-based opinion. And so I think that makes economic sense.
Yeah. Great. Thoughts, questions? Thank you very much. Anyone else want to get in on this? We will bring, so we've now seen all the proposals. We'll bring one back, maybe two, but one or two back for one more round of hearings, and then we'll try to work one after we let this group do its work. Anyone else? Close the public hearing on Senate Bill 841, and we are adjourned.